Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Sunday, February 10th, 2019. I'm your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth on Sports. Catch boxing articles and more on bchconsports.com. Number to dial in to have your take on boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Three, nine, press the one key to get in your take on boxing. And we have a few things that we're going to be covering today. Pretty much most of the action that had been going on over the weekend. We have, right now, some live boxing action on ESPN as you have former world champion Raymundo Beltran taking on Hirooki Okada. Hirooki Okada is undefeated there at 19-0 with Raymundo Beltran there at 35-8-1. With Beltran's previous fight where he did lose the WBO lightweight title to Jose Pedraza back in August 25th. Right now, we're in the fourth round of this particular fight, pretty much going on halfway through the fourth round. And, it looks like Raymundo Beltran has a little bit of a lead there, but, Okada's staying in there, throwing a lot of punches against the Beltran, but also eating a lot of punches himself. He's like eating a few counters here and there. Did get knocked down earlier in this fight, so he's pretty much kind of was fighting from behind. He did buckle Raymundo Beltran, at one point, but didn't score a knockdown or have Beltran in real trouble to have this be in danger of a stoppage. But he's been game here so far through three rounds and, this fourth round coming under 1 minute. So that's the live action right now on ESPN. Raymundo Beltran going up against Hirooki Okada. The main event here at the Save Mart Arena in Fresno, California, will be Jose Carlos Ramirez going on or taking on Jose Cepeda for the WBC super lightweight title there. You also have, in action, Genesis Cervania going up against Carlos Castro. And it seems like we may have had a, thing here where Joel Diaz Jr. Was also part of the card action and also lost by a third round knockout to Christian Rafael Korda. So that was his second loss in his last three fights. He did have a fight against Regis Progress back in 2017. Of course, Progress is the Diamond Super Lightweight Champion there. So He also suffered a loss here. So that's what we got going on right now. We're going to, try to cover the action that took place yesterday, as there was, a lot of activity going on in the card in California, which included Gervonta Tank Davis, but we also had a upset of sorts that happened, there with over in the Indio, California. So we'll be going through that as well. So, right now we're just, catching the live action with Raymundo Beltran out there against Hirooki Okada, and waiting for the main event to take place here after this fight is done. But once again, if y'all wanted to call in, the number to dial is 347-237-5539. Once again, that's 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. The main focus from yesterday was that we had the WBA a super title that was on the line, as you had, Gervonta Tank Davis there going up against Hugo Ruiz. And, of course, the, small backstory to that. One is Gervonta Davis, getting back in the ring after, pretty much an extended layoff with his last fight. Being against Jesus Cuellar back in April of 2018. So he, gets his first fight back since then. Of course, he's been, fairly active in the social media world in the sport of boxing, and, also, having appearances here and there in a few events, and talking a lot about possibly fighting another fighter there within the super featherweight division. But, he was able to, get a fight in place in parts of California. And, of course, it was originally scheduled to be against, world title or former world champion Abner Mares. But, leading into this past weekend, we saw that Abner Mares could not take part in this fight against Gervonta Davis because he had a detached retina suffered. So he couldn't be a part of the fight. And so they inserted Hugo Ruiz there to be part of this particular matchup. Of course, like I said, this was the first fight that they had for Gervonta Tank Davis. Since his fight last year. So the thing about it is that we were trying to see where Gervonta Davis was at in this particular point of his career. Hugo Ruiz, of course, was, someone that is, bouncing up and down, but, mainly was in the super bantamweight division there before getting into the, one fight that he had at the featherweight division, which was like 1 month before this particular fight. So they inserted him right in after he got the unanimous decision win over Alberto Guevara. But, his main campaign was there in super bantamweight. So, they just, inserted him in to see if, Tank Davis could actually be in the ring and, work a little sweat here and there, whatever it was. But leading up to the fight, he had that weigh-in where he was pretty much like a half pound overweight. He pretty much, you know, sweated it off and, you know, got a little haircut or whatever it is. You know, trimmed a few things off his head and eventually made weight for this particular fight. So we got in there against Hugo Ruiz and did what many people expected. Kind of like measured Hugo Ruiz and took him out in the first round with the right hand that buzzed him. And Ruiz went down to the canvas, got, you know, his catch. And, you know, the referee looked at him and said, nah, you won't be able to finish off this fight. So first round knockout for Gervonta Tank Davis. He retains his WBA super title at the super featherweight division and stays undefeated at 21-0. Real quick, we got a caller in here, 646. What's good with you?
Yo, JR, what's good, man? It's your boy, Matt, coming to you live and direct from the Gloom Tomb, New York City, Bronx, New York.
Yeah, bro, stand up.
Yeah, man. Yo, you saw my man, Tank Davis, man. That was just a preview of what's going to happen to my man Tension, the kickboxer, because apparently, apparently that's his next to Tank. I don't know what's going on, man. Yo, Tank did what he's supposed to do. You already know how I am. If you're in there with somebody, you're supposed to get out of there. I always say, you better get him out of there. And Tank don't get paid by the hour. He got that man out of there quick, exploded his whole face. I was like, wow, this dude knows he's leaking. He ain't want that no more. So my whole thing is, I know a lot of people are going to criticize it because the guy was a smaller dude, but you know what? Tank did what he was supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do. Blow him out. If you got somebody in the ring that's not supposed to be in there with you, you blow him out. Don't be like Dimitri Bivol when he's fighting John Pascal, and Pascal is way past it, washed up, and you can't get him out of there, and then you're crying that you felt his power. No, when you're with somebody that's supposed to get out of there, get him out of there. And that's what Tank did. So I don't really care about the weight thing. I'm just glad that he did what he was supposed to do, and I'm looking forward to this kid staying more active. He got to be active. And when I say active, I don't mean active against a Japanese kickboxer. I mean active against real boxers. Maybe someone coming up from 126. Maybe somebody coming down from 135. But he needs to stay more active, and that's really all I have to say about that.
Hey, I mean, hey, if he could possibly earn an easy, you know, $1.52 million, you know, fighting the kickboxer, why not go for it? You know what I mean? I mean, if it's out there for him and the demand is there, why not go ahead and take it?
Well, I actually heard that the fight with Tank and the kickboxer, if it does happen, is actually going to be a kickboxing match. It's not going to be boxing rules. So I don't know about that.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, you know, there is that, but, you know, also, you know, it had that possibility of Tank Davis kind of like trying to see if he could have a fight near the Baltimore area. That's what he was telling Jim Gray at the end of their post-fight interview, that, you know, we might, you know, try to have a fight back there in Baltimore area, or see if there's like something in, you know, within D.C. or, you know, where they have the MGM National Harbor where, you know, Gary Russell Jr. has most of his fights at, and maybe he could get a fight there in the near future. But I think you may have had, like, some type of idea of, you know, when Tank's fight really should be next up. You wanted to, you know, throw out that idea for the people?
Say that again?
An idea of when Tank's fight, Tank's next fight should be, where he could be more active.
Well, I think it should be on the Wilder Fury undercard in May, because May 18 is looking like the agreed upon date It's not going to be April. It looks like it's May. I think he should be on that card, and I say that for two reasons. One, it benefits Tank because that card is going to get a lot of publicity. It's going to get a lot of excitement. And the last time Tank was on a pay-per-view card with a lot of publicity and excitement, he didn't exactly put his best foot forward. He missed weight. He came out in a ugly fur getup, and he was underwhelming against Fonseca. This would be a chance for him to redeem himself. And not only that, I think this would be a big opportunity for Showtime and PBC to put together a bona fide, I need to watch this pay-per-view card. So if I'm Tank Davis, I'm trying to get on that Wilder Fury undercard. I'm trying to be, you know, not as you know, I have another bout that I want to be the co-feature, but be right before the co-feature. Tank draws a lot of tickets on the East Coast. When Broner was fighting, who was he fighting? Was he fighting Garcia when Tank was on his undercard? I know Tank came to Brooklyn.
Tank was on the undercard in Broner's fight against Ashley Theophane back in April of 2016.
Yeah, and Tank brought a lot of people with him, a lot of fans. Like, it was crazy when Tank came out. So Tank is a popular East Coast fighter on the Eastern Seaboard. So to me, please, just for the sake of boxing fans, keep this kid active and put him in, like, the biggest positions to become a popular fighter. Because I actually do think Tank Davis eventually could be a pay-per-view fighter, but they have to keep him active and market him correctly, because in the ring, he does all the marketing for himself. Like, this kid is a killer, for lack of a better term. So keep him active, get him out there, put him on the high-profile stuff, get him front-facing, and I think that'll help him, and that'll help the PBC brand in general.
Yeah. The thing about it is like, yeah, he keeps having those, you know, customary liners as far as like, well, I got to wait on my team, see what's next for me and everything like that. But I think for him to kind of like build into the pay-per-view person that he wants to be, he's going to have to, you know, kind of like try to take charge of, you know, where his career is going and say, okay, you know what, this is, you know, where I want to go. These are the people that I want to fight. These are the people that I want to take on. Because, you know, if he doesn't do that, then he'll probably be, you know, just matriculating as far as like trying to get up there while you have like other fighters that are, you know, trying to take more charge of where they want to be at in their career. I mean, you know, you have a, you know, an example coming up here with, you know, Mikey Garcia going up against Errol Spence Jr. I mean, you know, people are saying like, oh, why in the world is he, you know, going up in two weight divisions to take on Errol Spence? But it's something that he wants, and he feels like that's what he needs to do in order to be a pay-per-view star.
Well, I think Tank has that mentality. I just think that the thing with him saying he got to listen to his team, I think that is – he needs to say that. Because unlike Mikey Garcia, Tank has had a history of making stupid decisions, both out of the ring and in the ring. Well, we don't have to rehash everything he's done because this is not the weekend to shit on him with his great performance. But he's the type of kid that I think he needs to be kept in line, basically. And I think that with Mayweather seemingly taking a more hands-on approach, I did notice that Showtime was even promoting him more than usual on their social media platforms. They were liking and retweeting everything from celebrities. They were posting even celebrity walk-ins when they came to Tank's fight yesterday. So I do think they are trying to show Tank, hey, listen, all you have to do is keep your nose clean and everything else will take care of. So I think that for both his team and him, they need to build that trust together. And I think that that's why he's saying, I'm going to let my team do it. He's trying to put that trust in them, and it looks like they're trying to reciprocate by keeping him active and promote him the way he's supposed to be promoted.
Yeah, it was good that you brought up that whole thing about, you know, how Showtime kind of like was boosting him up and, you know, people kind of like showing on social media, like, these are people that are, you know, coming in to see Gervonta Davis, you know, quite out there in California. You know, you had, what was it, Stephen Espinosa's tweet, kind of listening to people that came out there for Gervonta Davis's fight, you know, including Odell Beckham Jr. and other stars and things like that. So they're kind of like trying to, you know, build them up to say, okay, this is the next exciting fighter out there in the sport of boxing, and you should follow him because you got all these other people that are out there that are coming out to see him in action.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing for them to do, because you know what? The kid deserves it, because I think his talent deserves it. He was a standout amateur. He has had a pretty damn good career. He's only 24 years old. He's already beat the likes of Jose Pedraza, blew him out. He beat Liam Walsh in the UK, blew him out. He beat Fonseca. He beat Cuellar. So, you know, he got some decent names. Even a Cristobal Cruz is a decent name because he's a former champion. So he does have some decent names on his resume already at the age of 24, not like a certain heavyweight that you like to criticize. So I think from here on out, Tank Davis, even if he's not fighting the sexiest names, keep him busy until he can get those big fights. Now, everyone's talking about him matching up against, I guess, the Tevin Farmer. I'm not sure if that's doable. I don't know how many more fights Farmer has on his deal with Matchroom. But if the deal's almost up, I'm pretty sure the PBC wouldn't mind putting that fight on somewhere on the East Coast, probably in New York. Because, you know, they want the Philly crowd and they want the D.C. crowd to come. So I think that's a doable fight as long as his contract is up with Eddie Hearn and Matchroom. I don't think it's doable because Eddie Hearn wants to bring it to the zone. There's no reason to do that. People were talking about him fighting Machado, but Machado got clipped. So that's out the window. I don't know if there's like a clamoring to see him fight Andrew Cancio. I doubt it. Burchell, maybe. Burchell doesn't seem like he's interested in fighting any live bodies, so who knows if he wants to fight Tank Davis. Maybe the fight that we're going to see for Tank Davis is one of the featherweights moving up to fight him.
Yeah, real quick, we just see the Okada Ida right here from Raimundo Beltran in the ninth round to go down to the canvas, so Beltran just scored another knockdown on Okada. And I mean, we're seeing here if we got more than a minute left here, and Okada's in real trouble here against Beltran, and he got to do something here, or else, he went down. Oh, I thought he went down to the canvas there again. But he got, there you go. He went down the canvas, and I think the, let me see, did they, yep, they did stop the fight. Your corner came in and stopped the fight. So, Raimundo Beltran just scored a ninth round stoppage over Okada to, you know, give Okada his first loss of his career. I want you to, bring back the point that you were talking about here before. You know, we just got that live update in reference to Raimundo Beltran.
We're talking about Burchell and a potential matchup for Davis.
Yeah, for Davis. Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to come from the featherweights because, you know, say what you want about the PBC brand, they actually do end up matching their fighters. It might take a little while, but they do match their fighters up in fights that we want to see. For example, we did eventually get Thurman versus Garcia. We got Thurman versus Porter. We got Porter versus Garcia. So they do match up with each other. Now, the question is any of the PBC featherweights like Leo or Gary Russell going to be interested in moving up to fight Tank Davis? That's really going to be the question, because Tank, he's a nasty character. I don't think Burchelt really wants to fight Davis, and I don't think the fight is doable, obviously, because of network issues. Would Davis be interested in going up to 135 to fight, you know, maybe a Robert Easter or something like that? Who knows? It's just time will tell. The main focus should be staying active. Line him up. Let him knock him down. I don't want to hear any talk about Lomachenko. We know the Lomachenko fight is not going to happen because of network issues. I know the boxing public wants to say that Tank is avoiding Lomachenko somehow. But I guarantee you, if Bob Arum said, you know what, we'll lend you Lomachenko, he could go fight on Showtime. I guarantee you that fight would get done in a New York minute. People need to be more realistic about where we stand with the TV wars that's going on. One thing I like about the PBC people is that they just say it publicly. They're like, listen, you're on the wrong side of the street. That's why the fight's not going to happen. And people get mad at that, and they make it seem like that's ducking. No, they're actually being honest. They're not going to pay lip service to the whole PR. Well, if there's a chance maybe we can make the fight. No, we know the fight can't happen. So don't tell me the fight's going to happen, Bob Arum, when you know it's not going to happen. Okay, don't feed me that. The public seems to want to be fed PR, and it seems like recently the PBC fighters, the welterweights, even the great heavyweight from Alabama, he's not interested in giving you the PR spin. He's going to tell you how it is. Listen, I don't like the deal. I'm not going to take the deal. If you want to fight me, this is what I want. Got to meet my asking price. Then I'm going to move on to something else. Call it what you want. I'd rather these fighters be upfront and honest than to lie about it and pretend like they're trying to make these fights when we know that they're not trying to make these fights.
Well, in the case of Top Rank, it doesn't really seem like they are really inclined to, you know, make most of those fights, especially when you have guys from other factions that, you know, could, you know, even try to put a few things together for their fighters to go on other networks to get fights done and get fights made. I mean, you have the, you know, little example with Gary Russell Jr. taking on Junior Diaz, where Diaz is under, you know, the promotion of Golden Boy at the time, you know, in order to, you know, for him to have his shot at the WBC Featherweight Championship. So, I mean, if they're, you know, able to do that, then, you know, why not have one of your guys at Top Rank go over to the other side, you know, other side of the sticks and, you know, try to get fights made or get fights done. In the case of Gervonta Tank Davis and, you know, talking about Tevin Farmer, well, I mean, Tevin Farmer has his upcoming fight coming on March 16th. In Philadelphia, but, you know, after that, we got to see what'll happen next for him. I mean, while he is, you know, currently fighting under DAZN, his main promoter is Lou DiBella. So Lou DiBella could try to get Tevin Farmer in a, you know, in another direction or try to get some other fights that don't necessarily have to be on DAZN tonight. I mean, it's not like he's in, you know, under complete control in the match room. He's there with Lou DiBella, so we got to see what Tevin Farmer does after he gets his hometown fight in with the title that he currently has. So, I mean, that's what we have with that. Now, one of the other things that we did kind of like bring up in the conversation there with Tank Davis's win over Hugo Ruiz was the other WBA super featherweight title that was put on the line on the same day over in Indio, California.
The real champ.
And you had Alberto Machado there going into the defend the title against Andrew Cancio. Machado was going in there undefeated. It was going to be his third defense of that super featherweight title. against Andrew Cancio. Came in there with the record of 19-4-2. This was, you know, his first world title shot there. So, I mean, this is, you know, something where you kind of like seeing Cancio, you know, try to see if he could step up to the challenge there against Alberto Machado. And in the first round, he had, you know, a bad start. He was, you know, down in the first round, but he was able to get like a good little scrap between the two on the second and third rounds. But in the fourth round, Machado got caught and was hurt, got knocked down pretty much like early in the fourth, and then got knocked down once again. And, you know, eventually he got taken out, and they stopped the fight there in the fourth round for Andrew Cancio to win that super featherweight title and hand Alberto Machado his first loss of his career. Now, you know, like you were saying there, Matt, you don't really necessarily see Cancio going up against Tank Davis in the near future. But, I mean, if you know, we're trying to get fights for Tank Davis for him to be busy in 2019, I don't see, you know, why not, you know, give Cancio a little, you know, opportunity out there, unless if they're going to try to organize a rematch between Machado and Cancio in the near future.
That'll be interesting. I think it's interesting to note that Cancio was not ranked in the top 20 of any sanctioning body. So this was really supposed to be a stay busy, just get your name out there, one-sided fight. And Machado got completely wrecked. And I want to address the people who say that Machado was the real WBA champion. Just because the WBA made a mistake and named him the super champion doesn't mean that he's the real champ. Since he's won the title, he's fought no one. Like, literally, he's fought no one that you've ever heard of. I can remember thinking back when you did the show where we were talking about him fighting the African guy who was having his first fight that he got paid for. What was that, Mensa? On HBO? It was the first fight that he actually got paid for. So don't tell me this guy's the real champion, all right? The real champion is not going to fight some guy who literally has never been paid for in a fight before. And then he fought Ewandale Evans, who's never done anything of note in boxing. So this guy, he was just, I guess, fighting to stay active, which is great. I appreciate that. But don't say this guy's the real champion, because now all of a sudden he's talking about moving up to 135 because he felt so weak. Don't make excuses. You know, you lost. You got beat, you lost. He beat you to the body, you ain't like that, and you lost. It is what it is. Now you move on. Hopefully Machado can regroup and maybe reclaim some of the little bit of name that he was making for himself. He's still not close to being a household name, but he was getting a little buzz among the PBC haters because they like the storyline if he's the real champion. But he had a piss poor performance. That's the best way I can put it. He was poor. He got beat by a nobody. He got beat by a tomato can, basically. And I think it's telling. I'm not sure if you watched the broadcast, but after he lost, they didn't even interview him. They just did a promo for Jacobs versus Canelo. Oscar got in the ring and started talking about Jacobs versus Canelo. So I'm like, they didn't even show this guy the respect that quote-unquote real champion deserves. So I don't know where he goes from here. I guess we're going to just have to find out.
Yeah. You know, the thing there is, like you said, in reference to Machado, I mean, he gets that, you know, win over Jezreel Corrales. And, I mean, even there with Jezreel Corrales, we weren't really, like, kind of highly rating Corrales as a world champion either. So, I mean, yeah, the thing with Machado was, I mean, you had to have him really step up against a highly ranked competition there in the super featherweight division, and you didn't really see that coming out of him. So with him having this fight against Cancel, it was just like, oh, this is going to be a ho-hum type of, you know, event there for him to kind of like go through the motions and get a win. But it ended up backfiring on him, and he ended up losing that particular belt. You know, in reference to Cancel, I mean, with that being said, if it was, you know, very unexpected, then who knows what they're going to do next with Cancel, because it's not like, you know, they kind of like said, oh, what if he wins? They probably didn't, you know, kind of like have that in their expectations. So now with Cancel winning, now they got to figure out what his next direction is going to be there while having that version of the super featherweight title there.
I know what they're going to do with Cancel. I know exactly what they're going to do with Cancel. They're going to feed him to King Ryan Garcia. That's what they're going to
do. Oh, man. You know what? Yeah. I mean, he's there, and he's, you know, in the top five of the WBA rankings. So, you know, they'll say, hey, look, here's a perfect opportunity for Ryan Garcia to get some type of belt.
Exactly.
You know, right there. So, you know, go ahead and have Cancel fight Ryan Garcia, and there you go. You got his title shot out there. And he won't necessarily have to worry about, you know, going up against Masayuki Ito for the WBO super featherweight title out there. Just getting another caller in here, area code 813. Tell us the name, where you're calling from, man.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. And just going to add in, I'm sure you guys have already discussed the fact about how the WBA has had Machado as a champion. Never lost his belt ring, of course, until last night. And, of course, and had to simultaneously have Tank as a champion, the super champion as well, which is ridiculous. But I digress. I'm sure you guys already discussed that, but that's just ridiculous. So I'm not sure. And even on top of that, so you had these two guys fighting on the same night, different fights, of course, but fighting on the same night for, once again, the defense of the same belt, which is, once again, ridiculous. And we've seen this quite a few times before within the WBA and particularly the WBC, but we'll move on.
Yep. Terrell, what's your thoughts about, you know, the thing there with Machado losing Cancel, and also Tank Davis's one-round knockout of Hugo Ruiz?
Well, I guess the biggest story is the fact that Machado lost, like Matt said, to a tomato can of virtual no one, and it's probably a great, great follow-up line when he said that they're probably going to beat him to Ryan Garcia, who, of course, they're trying to, with Golden Boy, push him to the top. It's an excellent opportunity for him to grab a title from no one, because if not, if I was a champion at 140, I'll be looking for a unification right away with this guy, you know. So I'm not sure who his promotion team is behind him, but obviously he's going to go for where the money's at, and he'll be a sacrificial lamb to whoever. That's pretty much what's going to happen to him. In regards to Tank, impressed. I mean, we know that Ruiz was a last-minute replacement. We know that his last fought in January and was pretty much unopposed in that fight. But player again of that one round destruction. That right hook. Imagine how hard he had to hit this kid to have that slight delayed reaction, and for him to go down and his face comes up into a bloody mess. I mean, he must have knocked the living shit out of that guy. I'm just impressed. But one thing, some people say he's the next face of boxing. I'm not putting him there yet, because he has to fight more top-level opposition and and have a few more accomplishments to be on that top level. Because I'm not necessarily going to put Tank in my top 10 pound for pound, maybe now, but definitely not the face of boxing. So I'll hold up on that. But impressive, definitely impressive.
Yeah, we were talking about earlier, like, what his possibilities would be coming next. As he says that he wants to be more active this year, you know, after just having one fight per year over the past couple of years in 2017 and 2018. So we're trying to see if maybe he could arrange something for being on the undercard of Wilder Fury 2, if that goes down in May, or have some type of fight later on, like in June or July. You know, maybe insert a couple more fights in there before he gets a higher profile fight against anyone else there that's in that super featherweight division. But also, we had like the undercard of these fights here that were both in California. You did have Ray Vargas defend his WBC super bantamweight championship against Franklin Manzanilla, and he scores a unanimous decision victory there to retain that super bantamweight title. But it kind of like seems like he's perfectly content fighting these contenders there as super bantamweight. I haven't really seen him have any hints of, you know, trying to unify or going up against the top guys there in the super bantamweight division. First, there with Matt, what's your thoughts about Ray Vargas and his current status there in the super bantamweight division?
I wasn't really impressed with him last night. He needs to unify quickly, because he only got paid, I think, like $75,000 last night. If he wants to make money in boxing where he can retire and take care of himself, he needs to start getting these bigger bouts. He needs to either fight, I'd say, maybe fight, who's this kid that beat Dog Bay? Navarrete in a nice little Mexican battle. He could fight Rigo, you know? Fight somebody at 122 just to, you got to do something. I'm not impressed. He has a nice little record, but who has he really beat? Does anyone really care if you got a headline anywhere? Like, what's his career plan? Like, if he's content with his current position, then I'd be disappointed with that, because that would mean that he has no ambition, no desire to be great, or no desire to make any type of money in boxing.
Yeah, it just seems like you do have that thing there with Emmanuel Navarrete there, you know, recently winning that WBO version of a super bantamweight title over Isaac Dogbo. But I think after that particular fight, I kind of like seeing Navarrete possibly going up against Diego De La Hoya. So that might happen, but I'm not necessarily sure, because they probably would want to see it, but De La Hoya could get a world title shot. But for Ray Vargas, man, yeah, it just seems like he is perfectly content and just chilling there with that WBC belt, not really, you know, fighting any of those highly ranked guys that are out there. So, I mean, he like you said, he's going to have to try to get more of those higher profile fights there at super bantamweight. If he can't, you know, find it there at super bantamweight, then you're probably going to have to go up another division to try to find them out there. Because, with that type of performance against Manzanilla, I mean, you're not going to raise any eyebrows with something like that there coming out
down
of that particular fight. Yeah. Yep. In the second round, yep.
Jesus Christ, what's up with these, with this, man?
Yeah, I mean, if he's supposed to be the, you know, trying to see if he's the man there at super bantamweight, he can't be getting knocked down or, you know, having that type of slip up, you know, against
a guy of Manzanilla's caliber. So,
yeah, you know, it seems like the only boxers that's looking to challenge themselves are Mikey Garcia and Deontay Wilder.
Oh, Mikey Garcia. All right, so we got Mikey Garcia out there. All right, cool. and we also had like out there in action. I'm sure that Matt was very disappointed to see that Ishae Smith fell by third round stoppage to Erickson Lubin, and that is the last fight of Ishae Smith's decorated career out there. So you had Lubin. Lubin, you know, is pretty much from the Orlando area. You know, had his title shot back in October 2017 against Jermell Charlo, but got caught with a right hand in the first round and was stopped in. So he, you know, had like a good little time to try to get back in the game. So he has his fight against, you know, Ishae Smith, and Ishae Smith just got knocked down a few times, and then his corner ended up stopping the bout in round three for Erickson Lubin to score that the 20th win of his pro career and give Ishae Smith his 11th loss. So he finishes, Ishae Smith finishes his career with 40 professional fights, 29 wins, 11 losses, and that was actually his first stoppage loss of his pro career, given that he's been in the game, you know, since 2000. So it's a long career for him, but hey, that's kind of like how it is sometimes in the pro game. We've got another caller in here from the 202. What's going on with you? You went on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? This is World Rank checking in. If my sound quality not good, please let me know. I just got in, so I'm hearing y'all talk about Ishae Smith. You know, it was a surprise to me that Lubin stopped him. But, you know, as you get, you know, you get older in the game, sometimes, you know, it's your time. And I think it's now, I think he announced it, Ishae Smith announced his retirement after the fight. So he made a lot in the sport. He was the first Vegas-born world champion, so he did make some type of noise in the boxing world. So, you know, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go.
Yeah, I mean, he did have that, you know, time when he was able to win a super welterweight title back in 2013, and then eventually get a few title shots later on down the line. But he kind of like floated around back there, you know, fighting a few notable guys, but, you know, didn't really have a point where he was a serious contender in the super welterweight division out there. But, you know, still was able to, you know, make his way and, you know, also, you know, floating in there, like I said, in super welterweight. He did have his short time there in the middleweight division as well, a couple of times, fighting the likes of Sergio Mora and Daniel Jacobs. So he's had, you know, his little run in his career. But, yeah, like you said, man, sometimes when it's time, then you'll pretty much figure it out when you know, can't really compete against those there that are, you know, kind of like really trying to make their name in the division out there.
Yeah, he had some decent fights. You know, he was always competitive in all his fights. I know there are a couple of fights early in his career, not early in his career, but when he was a contender that he didn't get the decision. I believe one of them was Danny Jacobs when he was coming up. I remember, I think that was a close fight. He had one with Fernando Guerrero that he probably should have got the decision. So he was always in all of his fights, all the way to the end of his career. So credit to him.
Yo, a lot of those times there, you know, against like you said, Fernando Guerrero, he did like have a close fight there, but was penalized for, you know, a couple of things. Either it was like holding or hitting after the bell or stuff like that. But, you know, like I said, he had been competitive in pretty much all of his fights that he had been in. So it wasn't like, you know, he lost and got blown out by his, you know, his opponents. He just was a tough out for anybody that he faced in there. Hey, Matt, what you got to say on E.J. Smith's loss to Eric Salubin?
Well, Smith, he was just a good pro. You know, he's what we would call a gatekeeper, you know, like a notch above journeyman. But he always gave it a good go. I hope he's happy in retirement. I was very impressed with Lubin. Was not expecting him to get the stoppage. I really wasn't. I was actually pleasantly surprised. When I didn't catch a lot, but I had to watch the replay because I was at a baby shower. But he was really impressive. Let's see if he can recover from getting smoked by Charlo. Let's see if he can match up with the Herds, the J-Rocks, the Charlos, and I guess now the Tony Harrisons of the world. Let's see if he can match up with Castano, Lara, the guys like that. Get him in these fights, and let's see how he does. Let's see if he can realize the potential that he was marked with at the beginning of his career, basically.
Yeah, you know, up to the point where he was, you know, going to face Chavel Charlo, he had, like, a lot of momentum, even though he didn't really have that many fights around that level at the time. When he did score that knockout, I think it was part of the undercard with Gervonta Davis over in the Barclays Center, if I'm not mistaken, that, you know, he kind of, like, put that momentum on and just tried to use that to go up against Chamel Charlo without, you know, getting, you know, more fights under his belt there first. And then he just was there with, you know, way too much momentum and just got kind of really eager and then got caught in close quarters against Chamel Charlo and, you know, kind of like a knockdown that was probably one of the most vicious knockdowns of that year. But, you know, now, yeah, so now he's, you know, had a couple of fights there so far, scored a couple of knockouts, but now it's time to, like you said, gradually build him up to see, you know, what he does against the likes of, you know, J-Rock Williams or anyone else that's out there within that super welterweight division. I mean, you got guys like Patrick Day, Roberto Garcia, you know, Arislandi Lara has a fight coming up, so you got to see what happens with Lara coming up. I think his fight's in March.
March 2nd against Castano.
Yeah, March 2nd. Yeah, and see what happens after that to see if, okay, maybe I could, you know, face the likes of, you know, a Lara or J-Rock Williams to see how he does. But for me, I think with Williams, I think J-Rock's going to end up fighting Jerry Hurd next since he's, you know, number one in the IBF ranking. So that might be where J-Rock ends up fighting. So we'll have to see here with Eric Salubin if they could, you know, kind of like gradually move him up there and then give him a eventual title shot later on down the line. Terrell, any thoughts about Eric Salubin or Ishae Smith?
No, I mean, I certainly agree with everything that you guys have already said about this fight. I mean, the casual fan would look at this as a 23-year-old going against a 40-year-old, and that the 23-year-old did what he had to do. But we just when you take a little bit closer, we, like I said, Ishae Smith has been a guy that's been he's always been a durable guy, always gave us a fight for not having to have that championship caliber to become an elite fighter. So basically, he's been a B-level fighter at best, and even with that, he's made some achievements, so kudos to him, and hope he does stay retired at this point. But more so about Lubin, like we know, he got knocked about Charlo back in 2017. To that point, he's strung together a couple wins, things like that. Good for him. But like you really want to know who he is until he faces that top level of competition at 154, and not only for him, but you want to look at his trainer too, Kevin Cunningham. So we know Kevin Cunningham trained Lubin. We train him and also Broner. And as we pointed out before with certain trainers, how much can a trainer change you and make you better? So now going forward for Erickson Lubin, we're going to be looking at him and particularly at Kevin Cunningham, because we know what happened with Broner. Some would say they expected that, but at the same time, your trainer, it should be able to elevate you and motivate you to be a better fighter so you can maximize your talent and potential. So we won't know Lubin's story until he faces that top tier. Here.
Yeah, gotcha. The thing with Lubin is that he looks like he has the talent and that he could, you know, put things together to be a very good fighter there in the super welterweight division. It's just that, you know, his confidence got the best of him when he took on Jermell Charlo, and he ended up paying a price for it. So now he's got to, like, clean himself up, get back in there, and, you know, try to go up against the other guys that are out there in super welterweight division before he gets that opportunity for a world title there once again. So you do have that. Right now, pretty much, you know, guys. All right, go ahead.
On to the Lubin point, I want to make. To be fair, in the Charlo fight, he didn't really get a chance to show us anything. And when we first talked after the fight, we talked about how embarrassing, or you know, how tough a loss that was, and how he was going to come back. Now I'm gonna give him a little credit because he has come back pretty strong to stop Ishae Smith, even though Ishae's whatever version that is, just to stop Ishae is commendable because there were a lot better fighters who couldn't stop Ishae. So I do want to say that he's looked pretty well so far since the comeback. But I don't want to put too much into the Charlo fight because, now, I don't know if you guys missed this or when Charlo knocked him down, he actually landed the elbow. And I think that played a significant part in Lubin being stopped. It was not a clean punch, in my opinion, from the stoppage from when I saw the replays. So when I first saw the fight, I took a lot out of it and thought Lubin wasn't ready. But now as I look back on it, I don't want to put too much into the actual fight because I actually think Charlo did land the elbow part of that punch. So I just wanted to add that in there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm going to have to go back into that to see if, his elbow, you know, also caught Lubin's shin before Lubin went on his way down there. Because that would be, you know, a significant part of, you know, why he was, you know, really out of sorts when he, you know, got taken down to the canvas and then, you know, in his attempt to get back up. Because he, you know, did try to, you know, get back up really fast after that. But his, you know, equilibrium was out of sorts, so that kind of, you know, threw his lower body off, and he couldn't really get up the way that he wanted to in order to, you know, continue or try to continue in that particular fight out there. Less than 30 seconds in, for those listening in and want to get in for the overtime section, call in at 347-237-5539. Right now, live, we got the start of that WBC super featherweight title there on the line between Jose Ramirez and Jose Cepeda. So that is, you know, now, you know, pretty much more than 1 minute in the first round. So y'all can check that out on ESPN. You know, here in the overtime section of the show, just, you know, looking ahead to what's coming up, you have on Friday, you're going to have Rob Brandt defending his version of the middleweight title against Kazan Beysagurov. He almost ran into a wall here trying to pronounce that. But, yeah, you have Kazan Beysagurov going up against Rob Brant for Brant's version of the middleweight title that's going to be on ESPN, around ESPN and ESPN Plus. And also on the 16th, you're going to have Leo Santa Cruz defending his against Rafael Rivera at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. You know, going up, making another defense of that version of the featherweight title that he won from Carl Frampton. So you're going to see a little bit of world title action there next week. You know, just looking ahead there on the 15th and the 16th. Before we kind of like get into the thick of things going in the future, like James DeGale against Chris Eubank Jr. And also favorite fight of one of the callers on here, Luis King Kong Ortiz against Christian Hammer. So we do have that there in the near future. Looking at, you know, what else is, you know, potentially out there. Like I said, on March 2nd, Luis Ortiz against Christian Hammer. You know, you do have, like we were saying there, Matt, you have Arislandi Lara going up against Brian Carlos Cassano for a version of the super welterweight title. But also in March 9th, you're going to have Sean Porter against Dennis Ugas and also Dimitri Vivol defending his light heavyweight title against Joe Smith Jr. So that's a, you know, pretty much a pretty busy set of fights there over the next few weeks that we have here in the sport of boxing. Is there anything that you're looking at in particular from those fights there? I'm going to start with Matt on this.
Not really. I just want to see my man Ortiz continue to show why he's the most feared boxer in the sport. Anthony Joshua ducked him. Only Deontay Wilder had the courage to take him on. Dillian White called him out and then subsequently ducked him. All these guys speak the name of King Kong Ortiz, but only Deontay Wilder had the balls to step in the ring with him. So I'm looking to see him bang out Christian Hammer. Hopefully he does it quickly so he could have time to make a maybe summer date. Maybe he could do a show down in Florida. Or maybe he could finally fight Dillian White. Maybe he could be the guy that Usyk makes his debut against. You never know. So I'm looking forward to that. I want to see what Castano has at the top level. You know, a lot of people might think that Lara is done, but the fight with Herd was very close, you know? So I want to see if this guy Castano is the real deal. He hasn't really fought anyone that I care too much about, so I do want to see how he does against someone like Lara. Sean Porter against Ugas, who cares? I don't really care about that. Sean Porter better win. I haven't seen anything from Ugas that makes me think he could beat Porter. But it's boxing, so you never know. That's really it, man. When are we gonna start talking about this AJ Miller thing, man?
We'll soon talk about the thing there with Anthony Joshua and Jarrell Miller, which is planned to be at Madison Square Garden in June, where, you know, I will eventually enjoy a steak dinner after that fight is done, but that those details will be disclosed a little bit later. Now, I was, you know, kind of tickled about your comment about Luis Ortiz because, you know, people that really know Ortiz is actually a myth, and I got something in reference to Luis Ortiz too because kind of like stumbled upon an article that was made in the past, but I think it was, you know, made by somebody that's a controversial figure in the sport of boxing. So maybe a few people won't hold this article in high regard because of the author of it. But before I get into that, World Rank, you got any comments on any of the fights that are coming up?
Yeah, man, I'm interested in the Castano one because I think it's Castano's coming out party. I think he's about to be a name in the junior middleweight division.
Wow!
So I'm looking forward to that. The Ortiz situation that he's talking about. I mean, I think Ortiz is one of those guys where people just want to avoid him, and I don't see him. I don't see there's any way to him getting a championship belt or getting another meaningful fight. I think he's just always been at the point where he's just been good enough, but not at the point where somebody has to face him. And as long as I don't have to face him, speaking in terms of the heavyweight division, why should I face him? Wilder took that opportunity. I truly believe Wilder didn't really have other avenues in terms of a name that he could get at that time. So Ortiz was kind of put upon him. But everybody else has been able to avoid him, and I think they're going to continue to be able to. You've seen the WBA play with him. You've seen certain situations play around him. I just think, you know, he's just going to be one of those guys that just, you know, avoid it for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I kind of find that, semi-interesting because, like I said, I've actually posted a public video last year telling folks that Luis Ortiz is a myth. And that, you know, the opportunities that have been out there for him were available, but he and his management weren't able to take them when they were, you know, pretty much out there for him. So, I mean, this whole thing with him, you know, eventually facing Christian Hammer and this super myth about Anthony Joshua ducking Luis Ortiz when Luis Ortiz had multiple attempts to face Anthony Joshua, not just last year, but even this year as well, because Joshua did mention Ortiz's name as one of those potential opponents, but we didn't hear anything from Luis Ortiz until we heard about AJ versus Miller. So that, you know, that's what we have on that. But like I said, I did stumble on a fairly controversial article about Luis Ortiz in reference to a certain program that one of the callers holds in fairly high regard. So I will, get into the actions of this so-called clean boxing program in the near future as that Ortiz fight versus Christian Hammer gets closer to happening. Terrell, anything that you're looking out for?
Yeah, probably in regards to the fights that you mentioned, probably the most interesting is the Leo Santa Cruz fight. And I just want to hope that he emerges from that, he victorious and keeps his title. And the reason why I say that, another person that's out there in that class, Gary Russell Jr., proclaims that he only has so many fights left, a couple of years left, maybe something like that, and he wants the biggest fight. So that's why we want Leo Santa Cruz to emerge from that. And hopefully get a fight, a unification fight lined up with Leo Santa Cruz. That would be a great match, size, skill, things like that. But even going back to the fight you guys are talking about now with King Kong Ortiz, right, continues to be just a person of interest in the heavyweight division, quote unquote, avoided, things like that. But even just going back to, you look at the WBC, right, so Jillian White has been the number one contender for quite some time. Ortiz is up there as a contender near the top as well. So I would have loved to see those two guys that fight coming up real soon. That's probably not going to happen in April because, I mean, White's ladies are coming back in April at the O2 Center, something like that. I don't think his opponent's been named yet. So Ortiz's name has been mentioned several times. But, I mean, bottom line, you look at it, WBC title is locked up for the immediate future with the Wilder Fury rematch taking place, whatever they work and finish on the details for that. And we already know what's going to happen with Joshua. I always say it's a fight, Miller in New York, I think in June, I believe you guys mentioned. So that's not going to happen. And you already know what's going to happen with that. They're going to milk that And when you control your purse bids and your offers, you basically control that business and who he fights and things like that. So the people like Dillian White, Ortiz, all your other heavyweight contenders, Joseph Parker, people like that, any of your young bucks down there, they're pretty much going to be relegated to fight each other. But at the same time, why do you want to risk your position in doing that? So it's kind of, I don't know, you know. And in the end, we're not going to get the best matches that we want to see. So these bottom guys are going to just keep fighting, taking fights to stay active. Hopefully one day you get a chance to fight kind of in that respective division.
Yeah, that's a good little few things that you did cover there. You know, first thing with Leo Santa Cruz, you know, with his, you know, upcoming bout there against Rafael Rivera, you know, eventually if he's, you know, able to take care of business there, then, you know, maybe he'll eventually have that unification bout with Gary Russell Jr. But, you know, Santa Cruz has been, you know, known to, you know, maybe sidestep the bigger fights that could have been available for him there, because they didn't want him to kind of like lose in a certain way that kind of like diminish his overall profile. So while he may be able to, you know, get past his fight here with Rafael Rivera, his, you know, kind of like his reluctance to fight Gary Russell Jr. or his, you know, lack of interest in fighting Gary Russell Jr. has been an eye raiser of sorts there, especially when, you know, those two guys are clearly the top two guys in the featherweight division. So, you know, as far as like that particular fight is concerned, we'll have to wait and see if Santa Cruz is going to actually address that if he gets his win over Rafael Rivera. But in reference to the heavyweight scene, you do have Dillian White freshly scheduled for a fight in the O2 Arena. That's, you know, slated for April 20th. Kind of like putting that as him fighting Alexander Povetkin, so it'll be a, you know, a high profile matchup there in the heavyweight division. You do have Luis Ortiz going up against Christian Hammer there on March 2nd to, you know, kind of like keep him within the heavyweight rankings there, and also kind of like keep his position in the WBC rankings while you have Deontay Wilder fight Tyson Fury again. But for Ortiz, it's just a, you know, matter of seeing where he's at as far as like his overall position in his career. But the way that his past has been, you know, brought up as far as like, you know, who he's been able to face and his, you know, issues with PEDs, that's what's kind of like preventing him from really being put in the overall spotlight out there in the heavyweight division. And actually, that article that I was talking about came about, what was it, back in January 24th of 2018, and it's on the Ring magazine, and it was something in reference to Ortiz and PEDs, and the author of that article was Thomas Hauser, and I'm sure that a few people are familiar with that name in reference to a high-profile boxer that recently retired. So that's something there that you know, people could look up in reference to Ortiz and PEDs and what Thomas Hauser talked about when it came to Luis Ortiz. Not only Luis Ortiz, but how the WBC and VADA worked together with their particular program. But you know, with that, right now, we have, you know, in action there in round five, Jose Ramirez and Jose Cepeda there. And Jose Ramirez currently, you know, has a cut there going into the start of the fifth round. But, you know, while that action is going on, I'm going to actually put a close to this version of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Catch the next version on Sunday, February 17th, here live, or you could also find it on demand on iTunes, on Anchor.fm, Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not to hit, not to send a trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.